This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Danielle Nuremberg, senior researcher at World Watch Institute and project co-director, State of the World 2011. Danielle Nuremberg is here today to tell us about the 2011 State of the World report titled Innovations That Nourish the Planet. Welcome, Danielle.
Thank you.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about the World Watch Institute and the history of your State of the World reports?
Sure. World Watch was started by Lester Brown in the 1970s because he was very concerned about sort of the state of environment at that time. And we've always been very focused on food issues. And this, the 27th edition of State of the World, is the first time that State of the World has focused entirely on food and agriculture issues.
How much hunger currently exists worldwide?
About 925 million people are currently considered hungry. That's a decrease from last year's total of about 1 billion. And although there has been a decrease, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done to prevent, you know, this nearly 1 in 6 members of the human family from going to bed hungry each night.
And would you touch also just briefly on the environmental implications of agriculture?
Sure. For instance, agriculture is responsible for about 1/3 of all greenhouse gas emissions that occur worldwide. This comes from land use changes, from the production of fertilizer, from deforestation and other things. Agriculture can also take a big toll on soils because farmers who can't leave their land for long enough fallow periods decrease soil. Agriculture is also one of the biggest users of water worldwide and causes a lot of water pollution through the overuse and misuse of fertilizers and pesticides.
What is the goal of the Nourishing the Planet report?
There are a couple of different goals, and probably the first and most important one in my mind is to tell the stories that aren't being told. Whenever Westerners hear of Africa, they think of HIV/AIDS and famine and conflict and disease. And what we wanted to show is that there's another side to the continent, another side of hope, of self-reliance, and of agricultural success. So we set out over the last 15 months visiting over 250 projects in 25 countries, talking to farmers and farmers' groups and scientists and policymakers and NGOs, and really getting their thoughts on environmentally sustainable ways of alleviating hunger and poverty.
Who contributed to the 2011 World Watch Report, Nourishing the Planet?
1/3 of the authors are African experts, and these are folks we met on the ground who are working directly with communities to do things like improve productivity, improve gender equity among women farmers, improve the diversity of crops being grown. So these are experts that we gathered either on the ground or through our Nourishing the Planet Advisory Group, which is a group of agricultural experts from all over the world.
What are the key challenges to food production in Africa?
There are a couple. One is lack of investment from both the international funding and donor communities, like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and all the other big foundations out there, as well as from African nations themselves. Only a handful of African countries right now devote 10% or more of their budgets to agriculture. And this is in an area of the world where at least 70% of the entire population depends on small-scale farming for their livelihoods. So one of the biggest challenges is sort of redirecting investment and making sure that small-scale farmers and smallholders are getting the support and investment they need.
What is the current situation in Africa in regard to growing their own food? What are the trends?
Well, you know, we went to Africa with not a lot of hope in our hearts. We expected to see, you know, terrible things. And while we were traveling in Eastern Africa, we did see starving livestock. We saw malnourished children. Of course, we saw a lot of terrible things. We saw drought and disease and extreme poverty. But what we found is that when African farmers are an important part and an integral part of agricultural development by sharing their knowledge with researchers and policymakers, that agricultural productivity can increase.
Would you speak about diminishing soil fertility in Africa as one of the issues that affects agricultural productivity?
Sure. In sub-Saharan Africa, most farmers have very small plots, and as their families grow, they divide these plots even further among their sons and the family. So each farmer has very little land to grow food for his family on. And this leads to a lot of difficult problems, including erosion, desertification, and just general lack of productivity. So finding ways for farmers to fertilize their crops without expensive fertilizers, either by using natural compost or animal manure, are very important ways of sort of reversing this trend. Roland Bunch, in Chapter 6 of the book, he talks about how using cover crops or green manure can really help improve soil productivity and eliminate the need for artificial fertilizers in sub-Saharan Africa.
How extensively has this approach been used, and how successful has it been?
It's been very successful among the farmers in places like Mali and Niger, where it's been used. The challenge is to get that information about that success to other farmers in other parts of Africa. But that, again, as fertilizer prices rise, as fuel prices rise, you know, we saw that when we were traveling on the ground that fertilizer was just too expensive for farmers to afford. And when they do have access to it, that it's often from places like China and very low quality, because there's only one fertilizer plant in all of sub-Saharan Africa. So making sure that this information about more natural ways of fertilizing crops and more sustainable agricultural practices, the challenge is really just getting that information to other farmers.
Would you speak now about the importance of rainfall and irrigation to African agriculture?
Sure. Most of the agriculture practiced, about 95% in sub-Saharan Africa, depends on rain for irrigation. Most farmers don't have access to wells or drip irrigation or any sort of other irrigation project. Instead, they depend on rain to irrigate all of their crops. But we saw in places like in Axum, Ethiopia, the NGOs ProLanova and GTZ are working with farmers to develop very low-cost, low-maintenance ways of irrigating their crops. One of the farmers I met with in Axum, whose name is Cass Maletti Abreha, has developed a series of low-tech treadle pumps that have allowed him to really diversify his farming system, raise his income, do things he really couldn't do before, like send his kids to school. And he's also turned his knowledge about these treadle pumps into a business. He's making these pumps for other farmers in the community. So it's just a really important way for farmers to irrigate their crops. And while these treadle pumps sound very primitive to a lot of us, they're helping at least 250,000 farmers in sub-Saharan Africa irrigate their crops.
Would you also speak about some local techniques to capture rainwater?
Sure. There are several. One of the ways that farmers are capturing rainwater is they build these channels on their rooftops that help collect the rain when it falls and channel it into a bucket or a big cistern. And this helps them, you know, collect water, have it available for their crops when the rain doesn't fall. They can also sort of channel this water into ponds and other catchment areas. Farmers are also building trapezoidal-shaped ponds at the bottoms of hills to collect water and help stabilize the land around it so that it doesn't erode.
What are the implications of these better uses of water? How has it helped the communities?
Well, in many of these places, you know, climate change has really taken a big hold. In sub-Saharan Africa is the place on the planet probably most affected by climate change. So finding ways to use rainwater when it does fall for more effectively is really more important than ever before. And as I mentioned, you know, Cass Maletti Abreha, the farmer in Ethiopia, when he could irrigate his land, he could really tremendously improve the diversity of food he was growing on his land. He was able not only to grow staple crops like cassava, but also able to grow fruits and vegetables. He was able to incorporate more trees by using agroforestry systems on his farm. So he was not only getting the fruits and the nuts from these trees, but he was also able to grow some of the trees for fuel wood, so he wasn't buying expensive fuel wood or deforesting nearby land to generate energy.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Danielle Nuremberg, Senior Researcher at World Watch Institute and Project Co-Director, State of the World 2011. Our topic is the 2011 State of the World Report, titled Innovations That Nourish the Planet. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. What are some of the innovations you noted in combining growing crops with ecological protection?
Well, I was just talking about agroforestry methods, and that's a really exciting agroecological practice that not only diversifies the variety of food that's being grown on a farm, but it can also help prevent soil erosion by keeping soil in place Farms that have trees also have more water because the trees attract and collect moisture. And one of the most exciting innovations through agroforestry is that these trees that are located on small holder farms all over Africa can be an important way to sequester carbon in soils. And this, as I mentioned before, climate change is taking a bigger hold on this part of the world. So helping farmers to find ways to sequester carbon in their soils is crucial.
How widespread is agroforestry in Africa at this point in time?
It's a slow but growing movement. Farmers traditionally have always used trees on their small plots of land, but because of the pressure to grow more commodity or cash crops like maize or cotton, a lot of these practices were lost. So these farmers have always really known how to do these things. It's just sort of reigniting an interest in them again and encouraging them to do it, which is necessary.
How much of a role does food waste play in diminishing food security in Africa?
Experts estimate that about 40% of all food is wasted before it reaches the market. And this is a huge consequence in Africa, where so much attention is poured into increasing yields and raising productivity. And if you're not putting the same amount of attention into making sure that those crops are preserved, that they're not attacked by pests or mold or other diseases, then all of that energy that's poured into growing them is lost. And so what we saw in places like Niger and Mali is that when farmers are working with researchers at Purdue University to collaborate on different waste prevention methods, like these hermetically sealed bags that help store cowpeas, that the results can be phenomenal. Cowpeas are a staple in this part of Africa, and so preventing this sort of loss can add up to millions and millions of dollars for these farmers. The experts estimate that about $225 million in cowpeas can be saved if farmers are finding better ways to preserve them. In other parts of Africa, like Senegal and the Gambia, we saw a lot of farmers using solar dryers to dry things like mangoes and papaya so that they could be eaten throughout the year. The season, the growing season for mangoes and other fruit tends to be very short in some of these countries. So having a way to preserve the important vitamins and nutrients, including vitamin A, which nearly 1 billion people worldwide suffer from vitamin A deficiencies, finding a way to make that important nutrient available throughout the year is really vital.
How big an issue is the tendency to go towards monocrops for export?
It's a very huge issue. The sort of insistence from many African governments is that farmers need to be growing products that they can sell on the international market instead of crops that they can grow for personal and regional consumption. And so, again, really shifting the mindset of African governments and encouraging them to devote their energies to improving more local and regional food systems is a challenge. But it's something that, you know, we saw groups like Slow Food International are working with many groups in sub-Saharan Africa and helping them develop projects that improve agricultural diversity on farms. We saw in Uganda, for example, the Project DISC, or Developing Innovations in School Cultivation, is working with very young farmers at boarding and day schools outside of Kampala and encouraging these kids to not only learn how to grow food, but to grow traditional African vegetables. And in addition to growing them and learning more about local agricultural diversity, Project DISC is also helping them learn how to process and cook these vegetables and ways to market them so that they can make an income off of agriculture. One of the saddest things, I think, that has happened in sub-Saharan Africa is that farming has been viewed as something sort of like a punishment, something that you're forced to do if you don't have the ability to go to university or move to a city. And so reestablishing farming as a career, as an attractive career option for youth, is more important than ever before.
How well is agriculture serving as a way for Africans to make a living?
There's a lot of opportunity there, but again, what has been lost is sort of the investment from outside forces like the government or international donors. You know, Africa could be the breadbasket to the world, but farmers lack the resources and the education and the other important inputs that they need to make their farming practices successful.
What areas of agriculture, in addition to more production of food, are being addressed at this point to try to make it a better living for Africans?
I think that there are a lot of ways that particularly NGOs and international agencies are working to make farming more attractive for youth and for farmers in Africa. One way is through making sure that farmers have a reliable market for their goods. As I said before, it makes no sense to increase yields if farmers don't have a place to sell their goods. You know, farmers are more than just farmers. They're businesswomen and they're businessmen, and they need to have an outlet for what they're growing. And what we saw in places like Zambia is USAID's profit program is working with about 200,000 farmers in Zambia to make sure that they're not only have access to a reliable market by connecting farmers to larger agribusiness firms, but that farmers have sort of the extension services they need to be profitable. Another sort of distressing thing that has been happening in Africa over the last couple of decades is that governments have let extension services go by the wayside. They practically disappeared on the continent. So there's no sort of government-led extension service. And unfortunately, that leaves farmers without, you know, any resources. Many of them live in very remote areas, not near even other farmers. And so providing a resource for them to gain, whether it's they want information about how to make organic compost or whether they need access to fertilizer or seeds, providing these sort of extension services is crucial. And what PROFIT is doing is training farmers to act as extension agents to other farmers. And so the farmers are sharing knowledge with one another and also have access to an expert who can help them get the things they need.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Danielle Nirenberg, Senior Researcher at World Watch Institute and Project Co-Director, State of the World 2011. Our topic is the 2011 State of the World Report, Innovations That Nourish the Planet. You've alluded a bit to this, but in what ways are African farmers taking the lead themselves in research and development in agriculture?
We saw some interesting examples of farmers sharing their information with scientists and researchers in a couple of different places. The first was in Tanzania with the World Vegetable Center, where farmers are going to the center and working with researchers to help them understand what sorts of varieties of vegetables best suit the farmer's needs. For instance, we met with Isaac Babel, who's a tomato farmer outside Arusha, Tanzania, and he had come to the center to talk to the scientists about breeding tomatoes that were more resistant to pests, that were sturdier, because he lived very far from a market and he needed tomatoes with harder skins or with more durable skins so that he could get his produce to market without it being destroyed. The other example comes from the International Institute for Tropical Agriculture in Abidjan, Nigeria. Their farmers are part of sort of the center's research. Women farmers in particular collaborate with the scientists and food processors at the institute on different ways to add value to things like cassava. So the researchers have helped the women develop sort of these value-added products like instant fufu and instant gari, which are staple foods eaten in Nigeria that are made from cassava.
How is technology being used to improve the life of farmers?
Everywhere I went in sub-Saharan Africa, I saw farmers either using or sharing cell phones. And they're using these cell phones not just to talk on the phone and communicate with one another, but they're also using the phones for things like gaining access to information about weather or markets so that they don't take their produce to market when the prices are low. They wait for when the prices are high. They're also using their phones to make financial and banking transactions, which most of these farmers haven't had access to credit. So by using their cell phones, they're gaining access to something they've never had before and building a credit history so that they can get loans or, you know, to improve their farms later on. I think, you know, as agriculture progresses, it's going to be more knowledge intensive than ever before. So this really makes the use of cell phones and the internet among farmers more crucial than ever.
Earlier, you mentioned women agricultural workers, and in your report, you noted that 75% of agricultural workers in Africa are women. Would you comment on the role of African women in agriculture in more detail and state to what extent their status is changing?
Sure. As you mentioned, women make up most of the farmers in sub-Saharan Africa, but unfortunately, they lack access to credit, they lack access to extension services. They lack access to education and information. And so this, you know, impedes not only the women themselves, but their ability to earn enough money and produce enough food to feed their families. What we saw on the ground, though, is that when women farmers are involved directly in agricultural development, that a couple of things happen. One, productivity increases. Two, their children and their families are better fed. And three, more of their girls go to school, which is, school is very expensive in sub-Saharan Africa, so not everyone can afford it. But when women are in control of the resources in their homes, they use it in more effective ways usually than men do. One thing in particular that we saw was in Niger, and there the International Center for Research in the Semi-Arid Tropics is working with women's groups to develop these market garden cooperatives. And so I met a group of about 50 women who are working as part of this African market garden. And so what they're doing is growing food collectively using solar drip irrigation on a plot of land that they all can walk to. And this market garden gives them the ability to grow enough food to feed themselves and their families and also have a lot of excess produce to sell. And they divide the profits equally among themselves. And this particular market garden just started about 9 months ago, and since its inception, the women who participated in it, their incomes have doubled or even tripled. These were women who were making only about $300 a year, and now they're making, you know, as much as $1,500 a year just by growing a variety of vegetables and growing trees for sale to nurseries and to other farmers. So when women are at the lead and the forefront of agricultural development, the profits and the sort of payoff is much bigger than when it's just men. Another interesting example we've seen is how theater, community theater, can be an effective way to not only educate women about their rights and their needs in communities, but it can be an important way to educate community elders and their husbands and men in the community. So what we've seen through FANRPAN, which is the Food and Natural Resources Policy Analysis Network, they're working with farmers in southern Africa to develop community theater programs that go from village to village, using theater as a way to educate people about gender equity issues and the important role women farmers have in communities.
Looking overall, what are your key recommendations or roadmap for nourishing the planet and improving agriculture?
I think that our key recommendations involve a more agroecological approach to agriculture. There's no silver bullet technology that's going to fix, you know, Africa's food security needs. What's needed are a range of solutions that focus on improving the environment, improving soils, making sure that farmers have access to the resources they need, and making sure particularly women farmers are better equipped to handle things like climate change in the future.
Which innovations observed during your travels in Africa did you find most striking?
One of the innovations that most surprised me and most inspired me was urban agriculture projects going on in Nairobi, Kenya, in Kibera slum. Kibera is believed to be the largest slum in sub-Saharan Africa with about 1 million people. And there we saw women who were working with an NGO called Urban Harvest to develop what they call vertical gardens. And these vertical gardens are essentially tall sacks filled with soil that allow women to grow a lot of food in a very compact space because they poke holes all around the sack and they can grow food on the top and on the sides. And what we observed is that these women not only were able to grow enough food to eat, they were also able to sell enough to earn an income. And they told us when we were meeting with them that during the riots that occurred in Nairobi in 2007 and 2008, that these sacks, these vertical gardens, turned out to be a really important source of food security because no food could be transported into Kibera. But their families, the families of the women growing this food, didn't go hungry because they were well-equipped. Another group of farmers in Kibera is really doing something interesting and cool and innovative on an empty lot adjacent to the slum. They're growing enough food, again, to eat and to sell, but they're also becoming a source of seed for rural farmers. In Eastern Africa in particular, it's very hard to find organic, high-quality, affordable seed for traditional African vegetables. And so what these Kibera farmers have been able to do is grow seeds very intensively in small double-dug beds and then sell those seeds to rural farmers So it reminds us that urban agriculture doesn't only help the poor and hungry in cities, it can also help rural communities.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I think the message I'd like to leave is that Africa isn't a lost cause, that there's a lot of innovation going on there. It just needs more investment and more support from the international donor community.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Danielle.
Thank you so much.
You have just been listening to Danielle Nuremberg, senior researcher at World Watch Institute, speak about the 2011 State of the World Report, Innovations That Nourish the Planet. For more information, check on the web at www.nourishingtheplanet.org. Again, that's nourishingtheplanet.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and kexp.org.